Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Timberwolves Gophers edition. Welcome back. Welcome back. Hopefully everybody's doing okay out there. We know it's trying times. Like I've said at the beginning of all these podcasts, we just appreciate the listenership. You know, we're here to distract you a little bit. There's a lot going on. We're both in positions where we're okay. We realize that there's a lot of folks that aren't, so our thoughts go out to them. And we've been doing the Vikings pod here a couple times in a row now, but, you know, the Vikings, although they might be doing plenty behind the scenes, it sure hasn't amounted to a signing or a trade or yada, 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 or even a cut or whatever. So we figure it's a perfect time to talk some Kevin Garnett. I mean, any day of the week, any, you know, hour, any minute of a day is a good time to talk about, you know, Kevin Garnett, a.k.a. the franchise, a.k.a. young fella, a.k.a. don't be too mean to him, young fella. So we're going to talk about KG. Obviously, him, Duncan, and Kobe, as far as the marquee men's players we're talking about, because there is, you know, a really good women's player and some other people in there, too. But this is, like, one of the best, you know, obviously Hall of Fame, you know, classes, period. It just is. And it does suck, obviously, without Kobe there. There is that picture out there where you got Kobe's jersey in the middle with a glass of wine on the bar and KG and Duncan on both sides kind of cheers into each other. It's a pretty good picture, actually. But we're going to talk some Kevin Garnett. It's an ode to KG. So we're going to really start when he was a rookie. We're going to talk about his rookie season. We're going to talk about, you know, when we had the Marbury and Gugliotta mix. We're going to talk about a variety of stuff. Leitner and Ryder was in the picture there for a second. And then, you know, as he grew, you know, and had to face Duncan and Dirk and Malone and Weber and Rashid and all these dudes and kind of bring us all the way through his career as a Wolf, and all the different mediocre squads that he had to drag to the playoffs. And I remember after a couple of years in a row, people would be like, oh, we're in the playoffs again, first round exit. But when, now you look back at that and you kind of feel stupid because we've only been to the playoff once since then and really haven't been that close in most years. So it makes you appreciate him. So we're going to bring him all the way basically to the trade. We're also going to start to focus in as we get later in the show, breaking down KG, that 2003-2004 season from a personal level for KG. There's a couple of career stats that will just blow your mind if you don't know them. We'll talk about the game seven and, you know, that whole breakdown and just that year in general, but really the playoff run. And of course, you know, when Sam Cassell, unfortunately, his hip broke down on us. And, well, we call it living in Loserville, so you know what happened then. But it's an ode, you know, to our guy, Kevin Garnett. We figure it's a great time to discuss him. And then at the end of the show, since we're doing, you know, the ball show here, you know, with basketball right now and not Vikings, we'll talk a little bit about the Gophers with Marcus Carr potentially not being here. That was kind of a surprise. And also, you know, the big men that we brought in and kind of look at the roster for next year kind of lightly because we still have a potential, you know, graduate transfer that we can get. We still have a potential scholarship potentially for a stud top 100, top 150 guy. We could bring in three 150s next year. We already have two top 100 guys for next year. So not all is lost, but obviously when your top two players go, it's kind of like, ooh, you know, wow, that hurts. So we'll talk about that at the back end of the show like we normally do anyway. If this is your first time listening to the Living Loserville podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoveradio. It streams live at archives, but you don't have to just go to the Blog Talk Ropeadove Radio podcast page, you know, to download it or listen to it in the browser. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Player FM, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found on Spotify as well, including, you know, across the board. Both platforms can be found on iHeartRadio. You can use your Siri or Alexa through TuneIn and Spotify to find the platforms. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.com. That's thegruelingtruth.com. It's basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, it's new stuff, old stuff, all sorts of different articles and podcasts. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu, with the promo code TGT. And one more thing, and this ad is even more fitting being given the times, you know. If you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not quite happy, you need some you've already ran through your Netflix or whatever. We got AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. I use it myself. They have a 7-day free trial. There's no annual contract. The plans start as low as $60 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. That's AT&T TV Now. That's live streaming cable. But if you're in an area in the state or a region in the country where it just – the internet's not that good, let's be honest. When you – it's different, you know, just watching an archived Netflix or Amazon show. When you live stream stuff, it is a little different. So there is AT&T TV Now. That's a growing platform. That's going to be your normal – oh, shoot. That's going to be – sorry, there's a little message that threw me off. That's going to be your kind of normal I'm totally lost myself now. Oh, that's going to be your normal cable thing, AT&T TV Now. That's here in Minneapolis, Minnesota, Florida, New York, Texas, California, all the way up to Seattle, you know, in the Northwest, other places like St. Louis in the Midwest. So it's AT&T TV Now is the live streaming. But, you know, you can Google AT&T TV if your internet's not that great, and you can find out if it's available in your area. So, like I said, this is just going to be a fun show. And, you know, if you didn't watch KG on a night-to-night basis, you just didn't really get the full gist of his career. And, you know, a year before he won the MVP, he could have won it that year, the year before. The guy should have at least got one more Defensive Player of the Year. But we know how the awards work. Obviously, we are the number one seed. You know, that year he won it. The next year, they were the number one seed. The when he actually won the Defensive Player of the Year in 2007, 2008, you know, they won the championship. They were the number one seed. So that's – a lot of those happen that way. But the guy was just – such a multi-purpose player offensively, defensively. Like I said, some of these stats that you'll see down the line are just crazy. Even the stat with him and Cat on the floor together in 2015 and with him off it and winning, or just with Cat on it, like even those stats way in his old age defensively will be like, wow, really? But anyway, let's start with the pre-draft workout. And first of all, let's bring in Aaron, see how he's doing. What's going on, Aaron? How's it going, man? You getting antsy at all, or are you just kind of getting in a routine now and so you got, you know, you're keeping busy? I know you've been just, you know, going nuts on the NFL mock drafts, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm not proud of that. I've gone a little deeper than I'd like to go on that draft. But there's really nothing else going on in the world of sports, so it's going to be fun to talk about KG because, you know, you think about it and you go back and you say, while it was happening, it seemed really, really good and it seemed exciting and there was a lot going on. But the little nuances and things that you might have missed, now in retrospect, what it's been probably 10 years, maybe a little bit more than that, going back and taking a look at a career and its beginning to its end, it's just pretty incredible. And we don't see that a lot in Minnesota. We get these really sensational athletes. A couple of them come to mind, Moss, Garnett, Peterson, right. Just A top grade, athletes and professional, sports players. And, you know, it's rare that they come along and we haven't got a championship out of, any of them. Maybe Puck gave us one, but I wouldn't say he was really that upper echelon type of player, but yeah, KG.
I don't go disrespecting Puck now. Hold on. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
I mean, no disrespect to Puck, but, you know, as far as athletically, he had a nice pot belly on him. And,
wasn't doing HGH, let's put it that way.
No.
We could tell that.
But in the freak athlete category, yeah. I mean, you go AP, you go Moss, you go Garnett's definitely that. And that all starts with that first workout.
Yeah, the pre-draft workout. And, you know, he had I think he took it one or two times, the SAT, and didn't do as good as he wanted to, good enough to get in. And the crazy thing is, once he actually put himself in the draft officially, he got that SAT score he needed to go to Michigan, because he was off to Michigan or Duke. Those were the two teams. But, you know, you hear all those, you know, not just from Flip and Kevin McHale, Flip Saunders, RIP, but other coaches, too, that saw this workout in Chicago in a gym, where it was basically like after school, hey, Kevin, I know you haven't ate in a little bit, you know, you got jeans on. Hey, you want to go do this workout? We need you to do this workout. And they just walked away from it, just shaking their head. Some of the details that we've known for so many years off of the explosiveness, the energy, the intensity of a kid just working out at like 17 at that point, because he is a May birthday, so he is literally like 17 at that point. It's really funny that McHale and Flip had to go back after that workout and be like, all right, now we got to go tell our owner that we're going to be the first team in 20 years to you know, have a high schooler, because it was Moses Malone 20 years before that jumped right from the high school to pros.
And the thing about it is they told the owner, but that's the only person they told. Like, we were in the dark, I remember back then. You heard little things about, you know, a kid out of Farragut Academy in Chicago in the draft. He might go high, 19-year-old getting ready. But as far as the Timberwolves, they kept it completely off the radar. We didn't know they had any interest in that 19-year-old. I think they actually said a few disparaging things in the press to kind of, you know, get us off the trail. And they really hid their intentions there. I think they walked out of that gym and said, all right, let's keep our mouths shut. We found what we want, and we're just going to try our best to see that we can get that at the fifth pick.
It's just funny. Like, that's the, like, if you look at, that's just the one workout. That's the one workout he basically had. Like if you look at the process now and you see the difference, that just blows me away. Like, the difference of how they did this, and obviously, you know, he had that long run of, because Kobe was next, then McGrady, and, you know, from 95 to 03, there was a ton of guys, unfortunately, you know, that came out that didn't amount to much at all, and some of them were out of the league after their rookie contract. And there's actually this clip that I want to play. I'm trying to get it rigged up right now on KG. This is Sam Mitchell, who was a big vet in his life at the time. And, you know, just the way, just some of the things that he says about Sam and just, you know, about KG and Sam, but something's wrong with this damn clip here.
Well, you think about back on that draft, and we talked a little bit off air, and really the most noticeable player that we can remember, I'm sure there's a few other ones that lasted a while in the NBA, but it was Rasheed Wallace. I mean, he was in that draft as well. I'm not sure what pick he went.
McDice
was there
that.
For a while, but he didn't have the long career like Rasheed and Kevin did.
Yep.
But I mean, that seems to be the only other first rounder. I'm sure we're missing somebody, so you can definitely comment and let us know. But those two seem to be the marquee players in that draft, looking back as we do now. And they're both great players, I mean, and a little bit different, but a lot the same. Kevin was just freakishly athletic and 7'1". As he put on muscle and got stronger, really started to dominate, but really a quick player. It really started that stretch four type of thing that we're talking about. So in a way, sort of revolutionized that power forward position into what it is now. Him, Dirk Nowitzki, Rasheed Wallace, a few other guys that really kind of made that.
Even Duncan had that 15-foot glass shot. You know what I mean? Like, a lot of those guys could shoot out. Weber could shoot out there. I got the clip real quick. This is Sammy. Rookie year here, Sam Mitchell.
We beat Kevin unmercifully in practice. We took shots at him, we hit him, never said a word. Never always picked himself up, and he played harder.
That's it, good, KJ. That's it working. That's it good. That's it good, KJ.
Sam crafty. And them vets, they use a lot of fakes, a lot of patience, and they let you really kill yourself. And that used to drive me crazy.
And there's a clip later when he's talking about Doc Rivers'
name on the team. He understood the history of the NBA, so he showed us veteran players. Even
this is Sam talking about when he first got in the locker room.
We were an expansion team. We weren't very good. He showed us respect. And then I remember after the first practice, myself and my teammate Doug West, who played at Villanova, were sitting beside each other, and simultaneously we looked at each other and said, one day we're going to tell people we played with this young man. We knew then he was going to be a Hall of Famer because, Casey, he was the best player from the first day he walked into that basketball facility from day one. He was the best. He could guard any position. He could score on anyone. And his love for the game, and you watched him. And, Casey, for 20 years, he played with that love and that passion every single day in practice and the game. And, Casey, I can say this. I never saw him take a playoff in a game or practice in my life. Now, think about that. Ever.
There aren't many people, right. And by the way, you can't say that about, let's be fair. I mean, even the greats of the greats, right?
Nope.
Baseball taking that bat off, down 7-0 in a hockey game.
Don't run out of ground ball.
Never checked out, right? Never checked out.
Ever. This, and to prove it, Doc Rivers called me when he first traded for KG. We were in Italy. Playing an exhibition game against the Celtics. Doc Rivers called me and was like, Sam, I need you to talk to KG. And I'm thinking, what's wrong with KG? He's like, Sam, he goes too hard. He's trying too hard. He's doing this. He never lets up. He never takes a day off practice. He never takes a playoff. He's killing himself. And I said, Doc, hold up. This is not an act. He does this. This is who he is. Doc Rivers thought Kevin was trying to impress them with all the thinking how hard he played. I said, no, Doc. What you done a single day in practice and every game. And this is going to be the key. If his teammates don't rise to the level that he plays at, then you're going to have to get rid of him because he won't accept it.
Yeah, and that's another thing, dude. Something we would hear is those practices. You know, those practices where, you know, Wally tried to get a little frisky. KG put him down. Like, there's just so many times, and that's why I gotta say, not to fast forward, but I gotta say, we're missing him in the practices, covering Cat for a handful of minutes here and there, giving him pointers, you know, just barking out stuff at him, giving him, like, scout on players he's already scouted the last 7 years, that type of thing we're missing on him, but you know, for Sam Mitchell, that dude was a vet. He was with the Pacers before and after. And for a guy like that to say, I mean, he basically, a couple games in, he was like, hey, Flip, we got to get this guy in. And Flip's like, hold on. We'll get him in the starting lineup. But I think it took, like, you know, almost half the season. But before you know it, he was starting.
Yeah, he started, I think, about halfway into that season. But, you know, you think about him never taking a playoff in practice or in a game. And then you contrast that with Moss, who says, you know, he'll play when he wants to play. It's a little bit different of demeanor there. And Kevin got in fights in practice. He was loud. He was vocal. He was always in somebody's ear. That's what motivated him, it seemed like. And, you know, it was pretty impressive to hear that thing about Doc Rivers and how he didn't really even realize what was coming his way when the trade went down. And it's cool that he called Sam, and Sam kind of figured that out for him. But, I mean, it's really hard to tell where you couldn't sort of expect that after watching Garnett play for those 7-8 years that he was here in Minnesota.
I think it's that night after night, practice after practice thing that people didn't – you know, as a coach, he's not necessarily looking at the – only when they play he's going to look at tape, and maybe it's the last 5 games or opponent that kind of looks like, or maybe the last game from last year or something like that. Maybe that's it, because you're right. I just think – a lot of it has to do with that. Even just to get on his rookie year a little bit and get this thing going a little bit. You know, his rookie year, you had Ryder and Leitner in the locker room. And to think about where that could have went, here's a kid, like I said, it had been 20 years since, you know, the guy came out, you know, a kid came out of out of high school right to the pros. And he was just so, like, you know, like Sam even said in there, he's just so advanced mentally in a lot of ways. The kid was a superstar, him and Kobe, stepping into the league in their second year. Both their second years, they freaking went to the All-Star game. You know what I mean? Like, or second and third year. And he could have messed up even a little bit, and it would have been just fine. You got this money. You got this fame. You got these commercials. And he was just so dedicated. Every year he came back, but you could see it started out his rookie year as a possession. Okay, here's a good possession. Here's two good possessions. Oh, wow, okay. Put you know, some plays back-to-back, and you could kind of see, you know, okay, this dude's going to be something. He started just collecting his rookie year, those double-doubles, and you're like, he's this skinny getting double-doubles? Dude, he's going to be good, and you could just see it. And then it would be 2-3-4 minute stretches, Aaron. And it really takes you back to that Houston game when you're looking at Akeem and you're looking at, you know, these guys, Davis, the big old frickin', I think they had Otis Thorpe still off the bench. Like Kevin Willis, I think, was on that team. Like there was about a 3 minute stretch and it had to do with that rebound dunk that he took off his hip where you're just like, oh, I get it now. Oh, yeah, this dude's going to be special. But it started out in, like, a couple of possessions here and there.
Yeah, just to piggyback off what you're saying, I mean, that at that time in the league, that power forward position was a lot of muscle. I mean, there wasn't high-flying guys, three-point shooters. You're looking at Kevin Willis and Akeem down in Houston. You're looking at Rashid when he came in with Kevin. You're looking at, Jesus, there's this, a list
of
guys.
I mean, you got Oaktree down there ready to pull you the hell out.
You got just strong.
Antonio Davis, Malone, Rashad, like we said, Dirk. I mean,
every night, and I've heard Kevin say this in interviews, that he knew that coming into that league at that position, it was going to be very, very difficult for him. And you're right, he was skinny. He was young. He's inexperienced, and they really had to beat him up in practice a little bit to let him know what he was going to face on a night-to-night basis. And I know we're leaving some guys out because we said some stuff off air. There's a few more guys, but you got to think every night, you know, you're going David Robinson. These guys were strong and big players, and they played power forward in the old school way where it was rebounding, defense, elbows,
right,
all those defensive type of things. There weren't a lot of high flyers until Kevin and Sheed came in. And you really got to hand it to Kevin that he didn't see a lot of minutes that rookie year, the first part of it. But little bits here, like you said, little bits there, runs here in transition. Stuff was going on. He was just getting used to it. And he was collecting 10-point nights and doing the things he had to do. But you're right, that dunk off the hip was an eye-opener. I remember a alley-oop from Ryder where you kind of opened your eyes as well to see what Kevin was actually – had the potential of doing. You just knew that if he continued to work, that he would be something special. Now, I'd be a fool to say that you thought he would have a 20-year career, be a Hall of Famer, but you knew that he was going to play for a while and that it was going to be exciting, and it certainly was.
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Like, we knew he was going to be special, but had no clue that he would league, you know, all-time defensive rebounder right now. Like, just a stat thrown out there. But the very next year, you know, we got the trade because I think we had Daniel Marshall and Gugliotta was part of that. Just a great, a solid small forward in there who had really, he had back issues. But, man, he was peaking right when we got him. And, of course, Marbury. We had Ray Allen. And if you look at that team, not long after that, or that year, too, when we had actually Porter. You know, we had Porter, and imagine Porter for just a couple of years. By the way, he still was there in 99 as a good role player for the Spurs at the end of the century there to win the championship for them. Imagine Ray Allen and just a vet like Porter, and that's your backcourt. You know what I mean? That's pretty nuts. But I also loved it because you had Marbury being the point guard, and you had Googs and all that, Gugliotta. Googly, oogly, oogly, you know, that type of thing. A lot of, you know, Minnesota fans know that. But to get to the playoffs with them right away, and that year we got swept three games because that's back when, you know, it was a five-game series in the first round. We may end up seeing that this year if we're lucky, a three-game or a five-game series in the first round. But, you know, I remember Barkley because Barkley had been – because Houston had won it a couple times, and then Barkley, once Jordan came back, said, nah, it's my league again. And the Bulls, you know, of course, and they got Rodman on that team, and, you know, that we all know that team. But, you know, I remember specifically when Barkley, at the end of that third game, brought KG and Marbury together and said, hey, you guys got to stay together. And at that point, it was like the new generation of Stockton and Malone, but on, you know, on HGH, you know, like on some other different level type shit. Everybody was saying that in the league. That combo there, the new, you know, Stockton and Malone right there. That's what people were saying.
Well, that's because we, you know, we drafted Ray Allen and then had to trade him to get Stephon Marbury. So they definitely had their eyes on Marbury. So they knew kind of what they wanted to see Flip and Kevin at the time. And they put those two together. I thought it was a really good combination. Steph was kind of a stronger point guard, able to kind of handle the rough and tumble NBA as far as that was concerned at a really young age. And, you know, could hit the threes. It was really good in transition. Could get the ball down the court and really start to feed Kevin, which is what we were looking for someone to do. And he was able to do that. And then you throw Gugliotta into the mix, and the beginning of a really great team was starting to form. And then, you know, a couple years down the road, Steph made his decision. And that kind of put us back into a bit of a turmoil. Okay, so now we need to surround Kevin with other parts and pieces. And then, you know, then you started to see the Zerbiaks and the other two players coming in. And in 2004, I think you want to get to that season maybe.
Well, I don't
right
want to
now,
go there just yet. Hold on. I want to talk about when Steph was – when we had Seattle on the ropes and Steph put a shot right in Gary Payton's eye and the king of shit talk got shit talked all the way down the court, New York City street ball style. That was like that series. No, you know, I didn't know, but we kind of knew that they'd win the series because 2 years before that, they had stolen game one against the Bulls with Kemp, Detlef Schrempf, Payton, and all that. But that series, dude, awoken me like, oh my, this is the best back. Because you remember, we weren't here for the Lakers, the Minneapolis Lakers, okay? So this was our first franchise. We didn't have a franchise, and then we just did. And that's why most of us here, that's our favorite NBA player, because that's our first guy that we really, you know, we love Jordan, love Magic, all these guys, but it was the homegrown thing that's our guy, dude. And even to this day, you know, he has a home here. But do you remember that Seattle series when we went up or when we tied it, I think, 1-1 and brought it back home? Of course, we lost, you know, the rest of the games or whatever. But that game where we just were just matching them bucket for bucket and got that win, dude, that was the energy in that place in the state was just phenomenal. And I think Marbury had gone to the rack and he missed the shot. And this happened a lot, too, because he could get to the rack anytime he wanted. But it was like, oh, if you miss, don't worry. KG's just going to rebound dunk. And that's what happened. But I remember specifically Marbury just New York City in freaking the king of talk, Peyton.
Well, that was – I mean, that's like Georgia Tech because I was a big Kenny Anderson fan. And then you had Marbury come after him. And then you put that New York City style into the Timberwolves and give Kevin someone young on the team to run it. Cause I don't think Kevin was old enough to go to bars yet or anything at that point. You need
right?
someone young to kind of keep him company, someone to run around with. And so that was the thing everybody was thinking. The two kids were going to come in and then you add Shawn Kemp into that mix of great power forwards in the NBA at that time. That's another player. Now, that was a high flyer, so you have to take back what I said a little bit earlier because that guy could move, but he wasn't the same kind
of
player.
But he wasn't on purpose. Yeah, yeah.
No, he wasn't that, but he could fly. He could do stuff. And so that was another opponent that he had to face. But, yeah, that series is when we started to begin to see, okay, well, this isn't just good regular season, you know, fade mm-hmm. in the playoffs.
Right.
There's definitely something going here that can go a little bit beyond that. May not be this year, might not be next year, but coming up, you keep these two together, there's good playoff runs ahead.
Yeah, exactly, dude. I just remember that series specifically, and I was actually traveling at that time because my girlfriend at the time had lived on or went to school on the East Coast. So I saw some of those games here, and I saw some of them there. And I actually – this is when Northwest Airlines had a, you know, a big hangar up here, I guess you could say. And they actually went on strike, so I got stuck on the East Coast. I'm like, that's cool. Playoffs are on. I'm going to watch the game, you know. And I just – man, I remember that. But like you said, then all of a sudden the lockout came. And you know what's funny is Shaq and KG, their contracts, they, you know, a lot of people just breeze over it with the, oh, that's why they had a lockdown because of those $100 million contracts. Okay, well, let's talk about the contracts today, shall we? It was never because of Shaq and Kobe too, but never because of Shaq and KG. It was because of Kemp getting older and heavier when he went to Cleveland in that lockout year. Because remember he said, well, I got to beef up for the East. Yeah, okay, you got to beef up the East. It was Patrick Ewing. It was all these getting older guys that had these huge contracts, not to mention the rookie scale was all messed up. The NFL, that 99 year is when they got that rookie scale under control, because I remember Big Dog Glenn Robinson was talking about he wanted to try to get a $100 million contract. Even like Big Country Reeves from Oklahoma State, I think it was, he was getting a huge deal out of you know, right out of college. So people always blame Shaq and Garnett, the guys living up to their contract, but it was always the actually older guys and the rookies that were messing up the pay scale. And then ever since then, the pay scale has been a lot better. The rookies, you don't just, you know, you can get to your extension quicker now. You don't have to sign a 7-year deal. It's only 3 or 4. But that always kind of bugged me. But like you said, that trade, it really broke down to Marbury couldn't handle that $100 million guy would be on the roster. But nobody was going to get that deal ever again until the next, you know, years in advance. So Kobe, like all these great – Iverson, all these great players weren't going to be able to get that kind of deal. Nobody was getting them. It just wasn't possible anymore, and he got mad at that. And I remember KG and him used to hang out sometimes in the same crew, and he would be. They had a little argument about it. He's like, you know, I'm the one who could take the last shot. I'm the one who could do this. I'm the one. He's like, well, you got the ball, you know, you're the point guard. So yeah, you got the ball, dude. You do what. I'm not going to sit here and force a shot up, you know. So they did get a little bit of argument about that. I remember. KG and some other of his friends talking about that back in the day on a video on a little special about KG back then. But, yeah, Terrell Brandon or Tim Hardaway. Hardaway was really – his knee was basically falling off at that point. So that was the two guys we could have traded him for. We did get Terrell Brandon, stop and pop, first half. You know, that type of guy, he'd go off in the first half and, you know, he'd be gone and didn't really play much defense. Brandon used to kill us for the Cavs, though, and sometimes you make those trades because you remember a guy killing you. You're like, ah. I mean, at the time, you had to get something, so it wasn't a horrible trade, but it just – he had injuries. Then he – you know, then more injuries there. Then we brought Chauncey Billups in, and you saw some potential there, and then McHale didn't sign him for a six – I think it was like a six-year, $20 million deal or something. And a couple – like a year and a half later – we signed T-Hut to like a 6-year 36. Like, we won't get into management too much because that's a whole different other podcast, but it did suck because when you talk about the Duncan matchup, because that was a big thing back then. Dirk didn't really get the respect until later in the 2000s as just a stud player, Hall of Fame player. But it was really Duncan and KG with a lot of people when they'd match up. And you can look at those stats, and you can't find too much head-to-head. But people got to remember, when you come in the league, and this is what we talked about off-air before, when you come in the league and you're power forward, Duncan, KG, who would you rather have? Would you rather have, you know, Dean Garrett, Rosho Nesterovic, Joe Smith, guys that, like Oliver Miller, guys that had already kind of almost ate their way out of the league coming on your squad? Like you mentioned, Ole Kambi, like, Irv Johnson actually worked out as just a decent center and then bring Ole Kambi, one of the biggest busts as a first rounder, off the bench. But just imagine having to always – we won't even talk about the point guards and the guards, but imagine that 1-2 punch we talk about with the center and power forward, he always had to go in there with like a knife and maybe an old pistol or maybe the Civil War stuff where you got to pack it every time you shoot it. And they had Uzis and submachine guns, and that's something we'll get to in a little bit too from KG. But it was people didn't realize, like, dude, you realize Dean Garrett is not David Robinson, right?
And that's the real tragedy there, because you got Kevin, who's, you know, a Hall of Fame player and was a really great player at the time, and you're going up against guys like Robinson and Tim Duncan, and they were really a thorn in our side for about 3-4 seasons where you just couldn't get past the Spurs because we just didn't have enough firepower. And then you lose Marbury, and then you make a horrible deal with Joe Smith, which comes back to bite you.
Under the table deal.
At this point, you're trying to put parts around him, but you're doing it just the wrong way. Now, the deal, Marbury's his own deal, so you can't put that on anybody. We had reporters up here. We had reporters up here, you know, on the radio at midnight trying to say, okay, is Steph going to stay? Is he going? Are we trading him? Steph forced his way out of here. I think if you talk to Steph now, that he probably will tell you that was probably one of the greatest mistakes he's ever made. You know, he went to be almost a god in China, but that's China. And so, and then the Joe Smith thing is just such a huge thing. We were competitive with the Spurs. Which were the people we needed to get over to get to those finals for those three seasons until that finally broke. And that Joe Smith was a huge help in doing that. But then you go ahead and find out how we got Joe Smith and how that ended up. And then that, you know, you lose the draft picks after
five
that.
Five first round picks. I think it turned out to be three. They gave us two of them back, but it killed us. And like you said, 99. Okay, great. So they won their championship. Okay, great. So who? Oh, Shaq and Kobe. That's right.
Right, Shaq and Kobe, a strong Sacramento team, all these other people rising up when you've got no capital to go ahead and try to get Kevin surrounded, and still Kevin was loyal, still Kevin was there, still Kevin was playing hard through all of that. It's pretty impressive, and also pretty – I mean, we're a Timberwolves fan, so we had nothing. Then we had KG. And then we had a long time with KG, probably, what, 7, 8, 9 years, something like that. And then
we were 12 or 13.
12, and then we're back to nothing again, and we're kind of in that spot now, trying to refill that cupboard, trying to get a guy in here. We know we have some people that, you know, can be to upper echelon NBA players at this point, but they come so few and far between up here in Minnesota and with this franchise. Some of that our own doing with the Joe Smith trade and some of that just bad drafting and so on. This period of time in Timberwolves history is really the only period of time in Timberwolves history, and Kevin Garnett is the centerpiece of that time.
Yeah, and that's what – if you look at the mediocre talent, the Anthony Peelers, he got Wally Szczerbiak to the frickin' All-Star game. Couple years after Wally left us, wasn't in the league. I know he had some injury problems. So many Hollywood – what was his last name? Hollywood something. A guy that, you know, was just a streaky shooter. T-Hud, streaky shooter. Like, so many of these players he dragged to the playoffs, and it used to just piss me off so much once we got their second, third, fourth, fifth year and couldn't get out of the first round because it was just a talent thing. And, of course, the knee-jerking, the Barreros of the world, you know, influencing the fans to say, oh, he just doesn't got it, dude. He ain't got it. He's not Jordan, you know, that type of thing. When it's like, all right, well, did Jordan not have Pippen and Rodman and other role players? You know, and we're looking at all these teams that have all this talent. You know, all those guys we mentioned, Weber, Rasheed, Dirk, Portland was stacked with talent. Like, all these guys had way better talent. But even on these runs, we talk about the Lakers, you know, they would go 16-2. Well, I think San Antonio won a championship. Maybe that was 2003. And then and maybe that was 99. One of those, you know, with the Lakers, the three-peat, one of those years, or both those years, it was 16-2, I think, was the records. And one of their losses was, guess who? KG going nuts on the road or something like that. Like, he never got his full just due until they put talent around him.
No, and interrupt quickly, I mean – he had to deal with three catastrophic things that happened to him early in his career. You got Malik Sealy, his best friend, dying. You got Steph Marbury turning tail and heading out of town. And then a horrible deal with Joe Smith. I mean, he never really had a solid footing or ground to work with here. And he never really had players around him due to these things that happened. Some of them by chance, some of them by stupidity, some of them by arrogance. Never got what around him until that 1 year. And even that was, you know, that was pulled together kind of haphazardly and definitely broke up haphazardly. And so you're talking about a Hall of Fame player who just could not, by hook or by crook, get anything around him for any substantial amount of time. I mean, Gugliotta was a decent player. Zerviak was a decent player. Terrell Brandon were decent players. But whether it was temperament, athletic ability, simple drive, Chauncey was pretty good too. But, you know, there's another folly. Gone again. So Kevin really –
and two, 3 years later, they call him Mr. Big Shot a couple years later after that. You know, it's like, so you want to pay T. Honey but not Chauncey Billup, Mr. Big Shot?
I mean, it's just it's a tale of woe, really, if you go through it. And I really wasn't thinking on that level until you started talking about just the things that Kevin had to go to as a Minnesota or go through as a Minnesota Timberwolf. And it's just staggering all the different situations that he went through here. It just blows the mind.
It really does, man. And like I said, the second Sprewell was about a wheel and a half. Because he wasn't in his prime, but he still was pretty damn good. You kind of had to feed him early, but he was still good defensively, and we didn't need him to put up 25 or anything like that. So he was like a really good role player for us who could go off. You know, he could go off. He still could get to the rack, especially he was seeing a lot of one-on-ones. Sam Cassell, that pick and roll with them two was just nasty. And you had Sam Cassell with the classic line, some guys run around their house, some guys run their house. I'm a guy who runs my house, you know what I mean? Like, Cassell, you know, and we're going to get into the season. But, yeah, when you look at all those negative Nancys here media-wise that definitely influenced the fan base, even good friends, I'd sit there and be barking at them like, dude, I don't care what Burrow says. Look at what these other teams have on their team, dude. Like, you know, and I could – it's like, what do you want him to do? He's doing everything. You know, it used to just frustrate me so much, but the second they gave him talent, and it was older talent, like I said, Cassell, then after that, we traded him for that year-old guard that didn't turn out anything. He had that hot-ass wife, that's about all he had, and from the Clippers. And even that year, the Clippers hadn't done anything. They got out of the – with Brand and Maggette and all those guys and Odom. They go to the second round with Sam at that point, you know, like Sam for that season until the end, you know, unfortunately, it's like he was rebirthed. It was just like a really good fit. And Wally had gotten hurt during that year and Troy Hudson had gotten hurt. So, and we tried, you know, Ola Canby, like I mentioned, but our starting lineup, we said, fuck it, we'll go Ernie Johnson. We got plenty of scorers with Cassell, Spree and Garnett, and then Trenton Hassel. He's our small forward. And he could just guard his ass off. And so you just had that perfect defense. You could hide Cassell. And then when, you know, Huddy never was able to come back all the way. He wasn't there in the playoffs. But when Wally came back just in time to get his groove going, and then in the playoffs, he was our sixth man. And he came in. He's like, oh, I just get to shoot? Oh, I'll light this shit up. No problem. You know, so it was a perfect fit that way. And like I said, Trent. Why did I just not, what the hell's his name?
Gary Trent.
Not Gary Trent, but the small four that started, I just fucking said it. Why am I just spacing his name anyway?
Oh, Trent Hassel.
Thank you, Hassel.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's just like kind of glued like, hey, dude, why don't we just make a defensive squad? Because we got scores, and we only have to hide Cassell and Wally's when he's in, you know. So it just clicked that year, like, right away. I think we were, like, pretty early, but then we got on a run that year. And I remember coming down the stretch. I think they had to win their last five games or seven games to get that number one seed in the West. And remember, The West was stacked with even better teams, top to bottom eight, you know, the top eight, than it is now. A lot of people say, yeah, but they're in the West, they're in the West. They were in the West then, dude. Remember, we all pined to be in the East and maybe even get to a conference final or the finals to the East back then when it was really bad? Like, you look at the, like I said, you look at these teams he dragged, and then you look at Love and Company and Cat and Company, and we can't even give it a 500 club out of these guys because a lot of it's empty numbers, and this generation doesn't realize that these empty numbers don't get you these wins. And KG was a perfect example. But let's get to that season, deeper into the season. Obviously, we make a run. And like I said, just to finish off that five or seven in a row we had to win straight out to get, I think, over the Spurs. It was either Lakers Spurs. But we had to win at San Antonio, I think in March or later April in that season. And we won on the road. And it was like, okay, dude, yeah, yup, we did that. We beat the frickin' Spurs on the road. Here we go. We're going to do this. And that was the year that the three-peat had already happened, right? And the Spurs had already won a championship. So, and I'm saying three-peat for the Lakers. So the Lakers had old-ass Gary and old-ass Malone. They had already kind of – they were looking for role players that year. And so they weren't exactly who they were for that – that three-peat.
Yeah, but nonetheless, let's put it in context, man. I mean, that's a Western Conference where you had the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq. You have Hakeem Olajuwon down in Houston. You have a great young Sacramento squad coming up. You had
the team that should have won. If it wasn't for that ref that got busted, they would have won that year, dude. We all know that, you know. That guy went to jail, the ref. We all know that series. You're right about Sacramento.
You got San Antonio.
Portland.
Denver.
Oh, Utah. Utah's always been there. Let's not forget about them. Denver was an up-and-coming team. That's what we had first round.
So when you say that it was a stacked Western Conference at the top of the Western Conference, it was stacked. I mean, a seventh seed, you were scratching and clawing for a seventh seed. You could get a fifth seed if you were lucky. You had to go what? I think we won 60 games that year. And ended up a four or a five or something like that.
Well, not
if I can remember, right.
Not the year that we went there.
And it was a three or four year thing where it was like that, where you could win 70 games and be a three seed. It was a stacked conference at that point in time, even more than it is now. And I mean, now it is a little bit, but man, in those days, you really had to win a lot of games in the regular season to even make the playoffs, much less to go up that seeding.
Yeah, I think we won 58 or 59 the year we had the number one seed. But you're right, right in that range. Like we had a 50-game winning, 50 wins 1 year, right? Remember that year, it was a couple years before this. We got the fourth seed. We got the home court. Sweet, dude. We got the home court. This is beautiful. Who do we got? Oh, it's the Lakers because Shaq missed about 40 games, so they were the fifth seed. You know what I mean? Like, that's just how it went. It was just like, so we finally got home court in the first round, something we haven't had for like 5 years or whatever. And then we got the fully healthy now Lakers ready to make a run, and I think that's the year they won it again or whatever. So, yeah, you're right, dude. It was so much deeper, and it was a two-way basketball then. Almost every, like most guys, the 3-point shooters were on your club. They came off the bench. Most guys were 3 to 4 out of the 5 guys starting for starting lineups, not just any old, you know, Jordan and 4 white dudes at times when that was the case. You know, like when you're starting 2-way players that could play defense and offense and just getting into that playoff run. We beat Denver. I remember Nene got just a nasty dunk in his grill from KG. That Nene was still in the league. I think he still is right now. And that was when he was like 2-3 years into it. And we beat Carmelo and company. And KG jumps on the press box. And everyone's going – everyone's like, finally, we won the first round. It was that feeling of that first round win. And then the Sacramento series come. And usually – that was when they do the MVP. And there's a lot of times where the home team MVP loses the game because of that damn announcement before the game. They break it down. They show the stats. It's like a 20-minute ordeal. The team comes out. They give the trophy. The team comes out and hugs it. It usually means you're going to lose that first game a lot of the times, or you underachieve in that game if you look at it historically. And we did. We lost the first game. The game was tight with that Sacramento club that, like you said, we just saw that highlight shit of Game 7, which we'll obviously get into. Stojakovic, Bibby, Weber, Brad Miller, old but still could do something, Vladdy. I mean, this club was stacked from the couple years before that. And but that game, too, when it was it was looking like, oh, dude, this thing's going to come down to the wire. And, you know, just to get off KG a bit, Sam Cassell with that 44 points or whatever, when he went down the fucking court and showed how big his balls was, I remember like, okay, dude, we're going to be okay. And that game three was an overtime game that they fought tooth and nail. And KG, go look at that game right now. Go look at KG in the playoffs. Go look at his highlights. They have them where they show everything, a pass, a rebound, a steal. Just go look at it from around that time, from like 99 all the way to like 2012, 2013. Go, the whole you can't deliver in the playoffs with Barrero and a lot of media members push. Go back and look at these games, dude. He delivered, Mr. Do-It-All and all that. But we won that game in overtime, and now it's 2-1. We go back six games, fucking Cassell got hurt, his hip. Got hurt in that game. They pretty much handled us. We were on the road, and I remember because my nephew, who was really young, got sick, and he lives up north. They had to get a helicopter down here. That's how sick he was. And I remember watching that fourth quarter, second half, when visiting hours were over in the little lobby and stuff like that. I remember like, oh, boy, it's a game seven. And you know, obviously, we needed a big performance out of KG, and everybody around here remembers KG and him saying this stuff. And I'm going to play the clip. Hang on. I'm going to do the clip, and I'll let you talk.
Game 7, man. That's it. It's all the marbles. I'm sitting in the house. I'm loading up the pump. I'm loading up the Uzi. I got a couple of M16s, a couple of 9s. I got a couple of joints with some silencers on. I'm just loading up clips, a couple of grenades. Got a missile launcher with a couple, you know, missiles. I'm ready for war.
I mean, and boy, did he deliver that game 7.
Yeah, that's just one of the greatest clips ever. Because you remember going into that game, like you said, Sam had hurt his hip a little bit. We had a couple other injury problems. We just got our asses handed to us by Sacramento, and none of us were feeling real good about our chances in Game 7. I think everybody was a little bit down on it. That clip came out maybe an hour before the game, and you just go, oh, man, because I think I was listening to it on the radio at the time, and they played that clip, and I was like, oh, this is going to be something. I mean, it's going to either be a 50-point night for Kevin and a loss, or we're going to find a way to win. And, you know, we knew that if Sacramento came out, shot the ball well, we were going to be in some trouble. And they always did. I mean, Stojakovic could hit from three. Bibby was nice from three. That was the first team to really start loading threes. Well, not the first, but a team that really relied a lot on three-point shooting.
Yeah,
had Weber
successful.
Down low,
right,
who could do a lot of things. And so we went in that game a little apprehensive, and then Kevin came out with that clip or that sound bite, and they played that on the radio before. He wanted everybody to hear it. And everybody heard it. He went out and just had one of the greatest games, I think, in NBA history when you go to look back at what he did. I mean, he was clean all night, made almost every shot, just dominated defensively and even offensively with not a lot of help. I mean, Hassel played a lot of time there. And you got to see, you know, they put Sam, they covered him up defensively, like you said, so that the hip wouldn't be such a bother. And really, he just facilitated that night, got the ball where it needed to be, which was to Kevin. And Kevin just, you know, went ahead. And, you know, he was the MVP that season. And a lot of people thought somebody else should have been the MVP. And I think that really cemented that, yes, he's the MVP. This is his squad. We're going forward. It was just a fantastic game to watch.
Yeah, and even we just watched it, his highlights, a 10-minute clip. And I mean, down low, when he got some space, it was over. It was a wrap. You couldn't block his shot. He had the fadeaway. He could hit the 17 to 19 foot jumper. That desperation deep in the fourth quarter where they're just like, here, Kevin, go. And it was a long three. He hit that. Like, I mean, the dude was just clutch. It was his birthday, which I think is May 19th. Like, dude, like, it was
that
crazy.
That block where he just consumed the ball. I mean, just tore it out of the air and just brought it down. And they didn't convert on that because Sprewell got a little ahead of himself in his brain. But, yeah, just one of the better blocks you're ever going to see. Just one of the better performances that you're ever going to see. I mean, Kevin, that was just Kevin's night, and he willed us to victory.
Yeah, and after that, I mean, the hip had sparked up in game six, but even through that series, there was times, really after that game too, that Cassell just couldn't do what he could do, and we could see in the Lakers, obviously. But so no Cassell. We didn't have Hudson in the playoff at all, T. Huddy. And we had Martin, a CBA call-up, and Hoiberg was basically playing point guard, except he wasn't bringing the ball up. So you had KG who could play and guard all five positions before LeBron could. Magic is probably the only guy that could do that, you know, at that time before KG. And I also think Scottie Pippen, that 6'9" of him in the all-purpose game, he was another guy. Magic and him were a guy that really, you know, Magic was the all-purpose, of course, but then Pippen did kind of add that athleticism with it, and then KG kind of took it on, and then obviously LeBron's taking it someplace else. Durant at 6'11". You know, we'll see where Zion takes it, but it was rough. You know, once we win that game, game seven, clutch, 32 points, 21 boards, like just whatever blocks. He just dominated the game, of course. And then we start playing the game one on, you know, and Cassell has to leave the game. And like I said, we only have CBA call up Martin as a actual point guard. And we pushed it to six games, ended up losing, obviously. The next year, both of the guys, Sprewell and him, were broken down. And then it was done. And that's why it pissed me off all those years we made the playoffs and people started to disrespect it a couple first-round losses in. And now don't you look dumb all these years later. We've made the playoffs once. We've had one – was it 42 and – were we 42 and 40 or 40 and 42 with Love and Rubio and all those guys? I can't remember, but we haven't even sniffed it besides that one year basically. And you look back and it's kind of like a shame on you and, hey, man, that was great, Barrero, you know, to get your ratings and stuff, but – you really influenced a lot of, and I love Barrero, don't get me wrong, but there's times where he would just go negative because that's his shtick, and he's super talented, great writer, and turned into a great broadcaster. I'm not ripping him as far as his career and what kind of talent the guy has, but clearly he influenced a lot of team or players, you know, not players, but fans back then, and it used to just piss me off. And what do you know? Kevin fighting a trade all the way to the end, but finally getting talked into, hey, if you want to help our team and our Minnesota, how about we make a trade and we get a bunch of stuff back for you, man? And you had to, you know, Chauncey Billups, a lot of people called him up like, dude, just go, dude. They got Pierce. It sounds like they're going to get Ray Allen because I think they got him in the draft. And he was just like, oh, shit, we'll go there. And what do you know? The first year, he freaking wins the championship with that squad, dude. And it just – I hated it, but I loved it. I had the Celtics T-shirt jersey, you know, and Pat, once he was gone, I don't like the Celtics or whatever. You know, I'm not cheering for them now. But I watched a ton of Celtic games and that whole run. And what do you know? The first thing besides anything is possible – and he cried for a while screaming. The first thing once they calmed him down a little bit, soda. You know, he brings out soda. Even Celtics fans were like, whoa, what are you talking? What are you disrespecting? You know, they must have been like, what are you doing? What do you mean soda, dude? You're in the soda. Like, that's how much he connected with us, man.
You know, looking back, and in Dan Barrero's defense, he was calling out the abysmal mismanagement.
He was calling LKG, dude. I'm talking
he was
about
as
that.
Well.
No,
he was doing that as well.
He used to harp on him saying he can't do enough to get a championship. That's basically what he was saying the whole time, almost.
Right. But in his defense, while he was also doing that, he was calling out the abysmal mismanagement of this player's career and how they could never get another player.
But how can you rip the GM but then rip KG? You can't do both. And that's what he was doing. But that's bullshit, isn't it?
I think you can do both. How could you not? You can miss the management and KG. You can. He was hard on KG, but he was also hard on Kevin McHale. He was hard on both of them.
But if the management's not allowing you to get talent, I'm not saying on a game by game basis you can't rip them for missing a shot or taking a jumper. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying overall his thought process back then about KG. You can't do both. You can't put a stamp on someone and say they're not capable as a franchise player to turn the page on the franchise and win a championship. You got to say, well, if I'm going to rip Kevin, then I got to at least put it all in perspective. And that's something he wasn't doing back then.
Well, I think his perspective, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, but I think he's saying, see if I can organize this right, is that you can't form the team and lay everything at Kevin's lap because he doesn't think Kevin was good enough to win a championship by himself.
There's no player that has in the history of basketball.
Right. So I think his biggest complaint was Kevin's great, but he's not great enough to win a championship by himself. And therefore, we needed help around him and the gross mismanagement. Of it.
There's no point there, though, because no one's ever done it. Michael Jordan couldn't do it either. Jerry West lost a bunch. He's the logo, and he lost most of the finals because he didn't have a good enough team to do it.
Well, that's my point. And I think that's Barrera's point as well.
But how can you say he's not good enough to be a one-man team to win the championship? That's impossible. That's my point. How can you say stuff like that when it's impossible? The history of the league tells you that.
Right, so I think you're just cementing my point. My point is that no player can do it by themselves.
Why rip him?
So he needs help.
Act like you're missing the point, I think, dude. Why can you? How
I
can
think you
say that?
Missing the point.
Okay, so you're telling me they're gonna rip McHale because he's not surrounding with the talent. We know that, but then rip KG for not being the player that can't get us to the next, you know, the next era or round or whatever. He was ripping KG as a player, even though he knew he didn't have a talent. Not ripping him in personal stuff like don't take a jumper there, drive. I'm not talking about that stuff. That's basic. And I love Barrera a lot of the ways. You can't over the top be negative about, because he pointed it to KG was my point way too many times when the problem was the talent around him.
Well, that's not how I saw it. How I saw it was that you can't expect KG to do it himself, therefore you need to get people around him to help him, and there was no way that was going to happen, therefore he kind of ripped the whole club and not just KG. I kind of understand what you're saying, but I don't agree with it. I think everybody knew KG couldn't do it by himself. That was the glaring weakness of that whole era, and that the fact that, yes, you can win a championship with players around him, but if you don't have them there, you can't expect Kevin to do that. And I think they continually expected him to overcome all of these things and all this lack of talent around him. And then Kevin was great. Kevin is great. He's a Hall of Fame player, but he's not good enough to pull that amount of or that lack of talent with him to win a championship. So I think that was more in my view, that was more of Dan's complaint. I think he thought Kevin was great, but I think, you know, the lack of talent around him was always going to be the albatross around his neck, and it was here in Minnesota.
One thing I know is I wasn't arguing with the wall. And Barrera was, because they'd always say, when I'd argue with someone this point, they'd always say, but Barrero's right. I wasn't arguing with the wall about Barrera. I was arguing with fans, and I'm talking about regulars, random people at the bar, at the game, everywhere we went, because I just think we remember it two different ways. I had argument after argument over this, and like I said, it was with human beings. You know, there are some times where he does go negative because that's his job. That's his shtick. He's a super talent. He is the most talented guy in the state on air when it comes to sports. He's a great writer. I'm not ripping him that way, but there's no denying some of the things because I kept having to fight the argument. But either way, let's. I'm looking at the time, and this is how passionate we are about KG.
You can tell it's still a very contentious issue, and I'm not falling on a sword for Barrero. I'm just saying how I understood the thing, and it's still very contentious because everybody here realizes that, and they think one way or another about that era of Timberwolves basketball, and they think about what could have been and what could have changed and how we could have done this and how we could have done that. And it's, like you said, it still brings people to arguments even today.
The Glenn Taylor thing, it's ridiculous because he talks shit on the way out like that. They forced inside the locker room. Taylor didn't even know this, but they forced KG to sit the last chunk of games because his knee was acting up and he didn't want to, but they forced him to. And it all started, this whole beef. And we're going to get to Gopher stuff real quick. But the beef started with Taylor talking shit on the way out. And it was real ignorant what he said. And it made no sense to say that about KG because he had already shown that that's not what he was about. And then when they brought him back, and just to clear this up, because not with you, but with the audience, this is the conversation going out there, and the local media are swinging this stuff. Well, it's actually more KG's fault because Taylor's reached out. Yeah, but it's not what you say, it's your actions. And when KG came back here, we all know he had a group to either partially sell, buy the team or outright buy it. Now, mind you, what'd they buy this thing for, like $88 million? It's valued now. We don't know the value right now because who knows? If there's no NBA this year, the values go down, of course. But the thing's valued at $1 billion. He bought it for $88 million. Sell the fucking team for one. But either way, they came back here. Flip was going to run the president. He wasn't, he's the president. He wasn't going to be coach. It's just they needed him to be a coach right now because he seemed like the best candidate. But they were going to replace that. They were going to work that out. KG was going to kind of be an internship in a sense and learn the ropes behind the scenes and also be there for practice and be there for Cat and all that type of stuff, big man and everybody down there. But he also got a group to buy it. So that was the plan. Everybody was on the same page until Flip Saunders passed away, RIP. Not all that long ago, Taylor sold the little stake off to a completely different person. And it's like, okay, so this is not KG's fault here. You know what's going to happen is when Taylor finally cashes out, he's going to come after Taylor's gone. Taylor is a douchebag when it comes to this. Great businessman. I'm not doubting him there. I wish you turned your $88 million into $1.2 billion and just be done with it. But, it is what it is. It is what it is. Any last words on the KG before we get to a very quick segment? Two really main stuff and a little bit of roster stuff with our Minnesota Gophers.
Yeah, I mean, the words by KG, I think, that are circling around the media right now are pretty pointed words at Taylor, and a lot of us want to know exactly where Taylor stands on those words. I think Kevin had said that he was a motherfucking snake. And I think it probably has to do with what you said when Flip passed, and maybe Tibbs is in there a little bit, and there's a lot going on, but it's a shame. I mean, just to wrap it up, this is the greatest player in Timberwolves history and one of the top three or four greatest athletes in Minnesota. And to not have Kevin's jersey in the rafters, to not have any kind of nod to him at all, is just wrong, and something needs to be done about it. And I don't know if Kevin's going to come around the team when Taylor moves on, but it's getting to the point now. And I know Taylor's 80 some years old, so I mean, I think we're closing in on the time when he either moves the team or passes it to a child or something like that. But it's time to maybe turn that page. It's quicker than later, I think.
Yeah, here's the quote. My years in Minnesota is, and in that community, I cherish. At this point, I don't want to deal with Glenn Taylor or Taylor Corp or anything that has to do with them. I love my Timberwolves. I love the people. I love my guys. I'll always love, you know, people who fuck with me there. And he even was surprised when he came back that game one when they sold the place out. Because remember, Wiggins and Cat and all were like, wow, this place can get loud when he came back as an old dude. And, you know, he says it's always a special place, state, the city, it's always a special place. But, like, here's your quote. But I don't want to do business with snakes. I don't do a business with the snake mother effer. I try not to do business openly with snakes or people who are snake-like. And you know what? I don't blame him because, like you said, it's going to move on. He will come here. They are going to sell that thing. It's worth $1 billion. They paid $88 million or whatever. Kevin Garnett is the only player in the NBA history, I forgot the stat thing, to currently, right now, to be top 50 all-time in career points, career rebounds, career assists, steals, and blocks. And the block is the thing that we got to keep LeBron away from. No more chase down blocks, LeBron. Don't do it to us. But when you look at some of these, he's number one in the league ever with defensive rebounds. Not offensive. I think that's Kareem. But when you look at some of these stats, you look at like the scoring thing. Once he got more one-on-one and late help, 2004, that year, MVP year, he led the league in points that year. Not average, but points. I think he was fourth in average. But points because he played the most games, and AI missed like 12 games or something like that. I mean, when you look at some of the only player in the NBA history to reach at least 25 points, 10,000 rebounds, 5,000 assists, 1,500 steals, 1,500 blocks, only player in history to average 20, 10, and 5 for six consecutive years. Larry Bird had that. Then he kept it extending it a couple years past that, nine consecutive years for 20, 10, and 4 assists. Most all defensive are tied with Michael, Gary, and Kobe with most all defensive teams, like, or, you know, all defensive team, whatever. Led the league in rebounds like 3-4 years of his career. I mean, the stats go on and on and on, and I'm, you know, we're not going to bore you too much, but some of the minutes he played the most in a seven-game series, like, it was ridiculous. But, well, I'll let you finish up if you want anything else beyond that, because I did go a little long on that before we get to the Gulfs. You good?
I'm good, man. Let's get to the Gulfs now. That's an interesting thing because we've got the whole Marcus Carr thing up in the air, and we talked a little bit off air about that and how that can kind of shape the team going forward in the future. So, I mean, we both kind of lean to the side that he's going to really struggle to be a second-round pick, and which kind of leads us to think that maybe he'll be back.
Well, and thank God he didn't sign with an agent. So that tells you that he's not, you know, totally, he's still available to come back regardless. But if you don't get drafted, you know, before you go to the workout, you get the feedback, and then you have like 2 weeks to decide or whatever. Now you can get, as long as you don't get drafted, you can come back. Now that's a little weird with college programs though sometimes, you know what I mean? And it would just suck to have two guys go out, not get drafted and still stay where they're at, like Amir last year. We knew we were going to lose the center tour. We knew that. But the Carr one hurts, dude. If he doesn't come back, and the only thing that, you know, keeps me thinking, man, maybe he can get in the second round is he can get off the dribble, the step back three, the all-purpose assist and stuff like that. Maybe someone could be like, we can mold this guy into a backup point guard. But either way, we did bring in Liam Robbins, a guy out of Drake. He will have 2 years eligibility. They're voting in the offseason here. And by the way, Carr might only get feedback. We don't know where this thing's going, so he may not do the workouts, which I think may help us, you know what I mean? But this Robbins dude, there's a good chance he's going to play this year because – folks didn't get to finish their year this year. So they're going to be a lot more lenient this year on giving the go-ahead and making eligibility right away instead of letting them repeat their years because there's a lot of pressure for that. They're doing that for spring sports but not winter. So I think there's going to be a compromise. Either way, they're voting in this offseason, but it won't kick in till the next year. So you, as a college student, athlete obviously, you come in and – you can transfer and go right into playing. You don't have to sit out, but you can only do it one time. So there won't be this, you know, so I think that's a good rule on both sides. So, you know, I think the key thing with this kid, you know, there was some clubs after him, Duke, Kentucky, Michigan, Iowa, Iowa State, Kansas. A lot of teams in the last chunk of days, up to 25, reached out and said, hey, we got a spot for you, just so you know. You know, blocks and rebounds is basically what we need. And at 7 foot, with that amount of bigs leaving, even the Illinois big is gone. We know the Maryland big's gone. A lot of bigs are leaving. So if we can just get 8 rebounds and 2 blocks, I think it's a good filler, man.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of things are going to shake up weird with the whole virus thing. I mean, you're right about, you know, maybe them letting them come in quickly on a transfer. Maybe some different, you know, things are going to be done with players who didn't finish the year. A lot of things. It's going to be a real shakeup NCAA-wise. And, you know, we don't know how to predict what's going to go on or what exactly needs to get done. But you maybe get another transfer kid in. You get a lot of different options. And if Carr goes, you know, you did send me the projected lineup. Somebody projected a quick lineup, and we don't exactly know how that's going to go. But, you know, you could be point guardless again, and we saw that last season, what not having a true point guard can do, and that would be the negative case scenario, I think, with Carr leaving, is you may not be able to fill that spot. I certainly hope that you could. Maybe you can find a transfer to do a point guard transfer to come in, or maybe you have somebody that you're thinking of. But, I mean, if you think about this season, though, the way it went for Gopher-wise, Chris, is, you know, not that the virus was a good thing or that all this happened, but it was a really kind of off season for the Gophers altogether. And they had a lot of talent. They just couldn't get over 500. Weren't going to make the tournament anyway. There was chirping about Patino. That's all kind of faded into the background now. And you see more recruits come in and you know, kind of ways to fix that team. And I think, you know, I'm not saying it was a good thing to happen, but it wasn't a terrible thing as far as that season's progression was going. You would have liked to see them maybe get a berth in the NIT or something like that and play a little bit more. And sad to see Daniel go, but that was going to happen probably next year anyway. God, it would have been great if it was next year, because he will probably be a first-round pick for sure, and he's gone. And so, and that's, I, you know, we had a show and we talked about it earlier before we stopped on the Living in Loserville show earlier. Was just like the potential of the team for next year was just outstanding. You know, if you had Carr and if you had Oturu, and now you add these other parts, and you might not have got the big center, but you added those other parts that were coming in. It has been a spectacular team for next year. But I think going forward, it's going to be a decent squad with who we got coming in, and it's still not over. And so I think overall, it's good things on the horizon for the Gopher basketball team.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting next year. We'll have some guys that played and whatnot. You know, they do have 2 top 100 players coming in. They are on, you know, the radar, the top 5 and all that, of a couple of guys that could still come in, like you said, a transfer and whatnot. But right now, this person's talking about Jamal Mashburn as the guard, Gabe Kolscher, Peyton Willis as the wing players, and Innen, who I really like, that Isaiah Innen, who can step back and hit the 3, he can defend, and then Leon Robinson, you'd assume he would be able to start at center. And then, you know, you do have, now this is going to be a rotational guy, like it says right there, potentially. I'd hate to even, I don't even want to mention it barely, but Eric Curry, you know, Trey Williams, we need him to be big, because he'd show these mini little spurts, and you go, okay, I can see that coming out. And then Omersa, just like a hustle type guy. Sam Freeman did, long lanky center, did get minor playing time down the stretch. Martise Mitchell is the other top 100 guy we got coming in as a forward. He could get some good playing time. They list him as wild cards. And then Greenlee, who I actually think might be a good backup point guard this year. We'll see. He might be just a depth guy as well. But, you know, the roster's not complete. We can still get young guys that can come in. And also, like you said, the you know, the transfers. So we'll see, man. It's just rough, man. It's rough. I just like our chances so much better making the tournament if Carr comes back, you know, because like you said, that point guard position, you know.
Yeah, it's so important. And we saw, you know, firsthand what that difference can make to a team. I'm sure that team last year could have gone on maybe a little bit, had a much better chance against Michigan State, I think, with a decent point guard and someone to go against Cassius Winston, who's also going to be gone. So the whole Big Ten is going to be a lot different next year. And so I guess we wrap up the show, but we have tried to hype or get our social media up a little bit more. So we got an Instagram page now. So if you want to go to that, there's going to be a little content on there. We'll put on previews and links to the show. But you can find that at living.in.loserville.podcast at Instagram. And, you know, feel free to comment or write back. We've got a lot of things that we've talked about on this show that you might want to put your two cents in on. So it'd be nice to get some more followers. So go ahead and find us again. That's living.in.loserville.podcast at Instagram.
There we have it. And also, you know, next week we're going to do a draft preview. The week after we're going to do a mock draft. We may both do it, him using trade scenarios potentially and me just going straight up. We may do a double mock draft, but that's going to be the week of the draft. Then, of course, we have a post-draft show. But then when that's done, we will circle back on the Living in Loserville podcast and talk about the season that never existed. 96-97 Minnesota Gopher Club. We got to talk about it, folks. We got to talk about it. Until next week, we'll be back. You know, we may do a 20 or 30 minute show once again this weekend if Trent Williams is a Viking or some kind of big thing happens. But either way, we'll see you next time. Peace.